This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari. Star
Safari. Welcome to Y-Space.
Welcome to Y-Space.
So there's another comet in the sky.
Yay, we actually saw it. It's green and fluffy.
Like most comets, fluffy. And green, actually. That's quite a common colour, isn't it, for comets? So this one sits, well, at the moment, it's in Capricornus. Now, we call Capricornus the golf flag because it looks a bit like a golf flag. It's kind of got a triangular shape with a like a pole, if you imagine, sort of a golf flag. And it's, well, when we've been looking the last few nights, it's sort of down towards the, well, halfway down towards the pointy bit of the golf flag.
Yeah.
That's the highly technical
name for the constellation of Capricornus.
Astrophysical
which,
term.
Which actually Capricornus is a goat with a horn, as the abundance horn from Amalthea, the goat that fed Zeus or Jupiter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so like quite a busy goat.
So that's a constellation that is a goat.
Be like one of those goats on the Rimutaka Hill.
Yeah, yeah, eating all the everything, basically. So it's a good constellation to have because goats are adapted now all around the world.
Goats, yeah. Feral pests.
Yeah, everywhere. So why wouldn't you have them in the sky as well?
Ah, so the constellation of Capricornus represents feral pests.
Feral pests of goats, yeah. And they're everywhere. They're really good climbers. They can climb trees. I've seen goats climbing trees. Yeah.
Well,
there you go.
And returning to
and they have
the realms, return to the realms of space, this comet's quite interesting. It's a short period comet.
Yeah.
So that means it visits quite often. How often does it visit? Every 3 years?
5 years.
Oh, cool.
5.5 years.
I thought we recognized it.
Yeah. Say hi.
It was like, oh, you again.
Oh, you again.
Yeah. So it's 10P Temple 2.
And it's actually really amazing because it's magnitude 7, which means you can see it really well in a telescope.
Yeah.
7 point something, but it's good enough.
Yeah, yeah.
There's another comet in the sky currently, which I cannot remember the name, but is it magnitude 11? So
no, it's a bit faint there.
Yeah.
So is that the one that's meant to brighten up later on?
They're all meant to brighten up later on. And considering the last 3 to 4 years, 5 years, none of them lived up to our expectations, did they?
Yeah, they've all been a bit of a disappointment. Earlier, well, last year we had a comet that was actually visible to the eye, though just... It was pretty hard to see. And that was down on the southwest direction, quite low to the horizon after sunset.
Mm.
That was quite impressive, a big long tail. And then we had the earlier one this year, which I can't remember the name.
Me neither.
Just a few months ago.
Yeah.
But that had a really impressive tail, didn't
it? So many comets.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
So many other things to remember.
Yeah.
But this one, this Temple comet, it's coming really close to the sun and it will be passing at about 1.4 AU, astronomical units, which is the distance from the Earth to the sun, which is 150 million kilometers.
Which for comets is actually not that close to the sun.
Which is good because it doesn't get disintegrated, right?
Yeah.
So it is good, actually.
Yeah, and it means it also it won't have, well, the flip side is it probably won't flare up and have a nice big tail. But that's okay. It means, another 5.4 years, we get to have another look at it.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay. So there's not, it's going to be there.
Comets are quite cool. There are a lot of them, despite us not seeing that many of them. So every year we'd see probably a couple, don't we?
Yeah, we see a lot of them.
Yeah.
It is a really cool thing to see. We looked at it in the telescope and photographed it. You photographed it with your C-Star.
Yep. The other day.
Not even.
Get that nice green colour.
Easiest telescope in the world.
You just point at it and off it goes. In fact, you don't have to point at it, you just tell it.
You just, yeah, shouted it.
Yeah. And off it goes. So the sun's been quite busy lately. We took a picture of the sun yesterday and there's some huge sunspots on it.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Around the equator.
which is normally where they are. There was a very large sunspot on the right-hand side, and this big grouping of sunspots, which is quite cool. Now, sunspots, of course, can be associated with flares, so you get some big explosions on the surface of the sun. And if the conditions are right and they're pointing in exactly the right direction, you can end up with an aurora, which is pretty cool.
Which is pretty
And
cool, yeah.
in fact, in the last few days, there has been some pretty good pictures of an aurora, certainly down south. So down in the Cargill, people have been taking some good pictures of aurora.
Well, let me tell you that the sun is in the constellation of Cancer.
Yes. Okay. That's everybody's astrological sign at this time of the year, right? So what else is happening in
Anybody needs to
space?
find the sun in the sky.
What else is happening in space?
Heaps of things happening in space. Scorpius is very high in the sky, really good and visible. And you can actually see the amazing deep sky objects that are in that constellation.
And that's around near the center, well, it's just above the center of the galaxy. So we see Lagoon Nebula. What else have you been looking at?
I've been looking at the Wild Duck cluster,
Oh, yep, that's
which is
visible
not in
now.
Scorpius, it's just above Altair and the Eagle, but still, it's on its trajectory in the Milky Way. Really cool. Or M11, really, really awesome. I've seen Swan Nebula. That looks like number two.
Also known as Omega.
Yep. I have seen the Trifid Nebula, which is pretty amazing. It's an emission and a reflection nebula, and
Sort of
it's
looks like a Trifid.
fabulous. The emission nebula has a couple of stars in the center, and then three cracks that go from the center to the. It's such an insane object to look at. And then you've got the cloud that is surrounding it, and then you have the other nebula next to it, which you can see as well. And that is, if you take a picture of it, is blue. If you take a picture of the other one, is pink. So that's one of my favorite objects, pink and blue.
It's kind of like a pink and a blue flower next to each other, eh?
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Well, hence Trifid,
Phenomenal.
kind
So
of.
what does it mean, reflection nebula and emission nebula?
Wow. So an emission nebula, they're kind of the pinky reddish ones. What they're doing is they're absorbing these photons coming out of bright stars. So they're little atoms in the clouds, mainly hydrogen. They have electrons whizzing around them. Well, an electron cloud going around them. And those photons get absorbed by the electron, and they go up into a different energy state, so they get even more excited. And then a little while later, they drop down and they release a photon at a reddish wavelength. So they're absorbing this ultraviolet light from these bright stars and then re-emitting the light or the photons at a fairly constant sort of frequency in that red. Now, the other type of nebula, the reflection one, is basically dust being lit up by the light from these bright stars. So they're the two kind of things you got. Now, if you took a black and white picture, a lot of people say, "Oh, why do we color photos? Why do we?" And they get a bit critical of it. They say, "Oh, this false color, it's all made up."
Some of
Well,
it is.
it's not. It's done for a reason. So a black and white photo, which is what our eyes would see because we just don't perceive the color. So black and white photo, you couldn't tell easily between the reflection nebula and the emission nebula. But if you get a color picture, you can tell between the reflection and the emission.
But if you take a picture of Trifid Nebula, it's not fakely colored. It literally comes up in the photo as pink and
Yeah, it
blue.
does. Yeah. But you can
Like
also,
the Lateriki stars are blue.
you can also apply a different color palette to it. So what like Hubble uses, you can apply the Hubble palette. And that's basically giving a different color to the channels of the wavelengths that you're receiving.
Okay.
And you can do that to look for different types of things in the gas cloud, try and identify different elements and things, which can be quite useful for understanding a little bit more about those clouds.
Very cool.
So red clouds seem to be quite hot as well. So they're absorbing a bit of energy. Those atoms get a bit excited. So the temperature of those reddish clouds can be as high as 10,000 degrees, sometimes even higher.
Wow.
But if you went, this is the weird thing. So you think, well, 10,000 degrees, that's quite toasty. If you went up there, it might melt. Well, the atoms are so far apart It's not like you kind of put your hand out into space and you're going to feel 10,000 degrees. It's not going to work like that. But it's still like quite hard, quite hot.
Very cool.
So also in the vicinity of those nebulae, so you've got Lagoon kind of up high, then you've got Trifid pretty close to it. Then you've
The
got,
globular cluster.
oh, there's a globular cluster,
Yeah.
M22. That's the
No,
third.
there's another globular cluster.
Well, the M22 is the third brightest one in the night sky. Number four is NGC 6572. Oh, no, 6752 is the one, which is in Parvo, which we took a photo of the other night.
It did. Very cool.
But that's actually in a different part of the sky. But M22 is up pretty close to Sagittarius. And there's another glob which Ari is furiously looking up the name for.
Yeah, because it's got one of those names that you can never remember.
Clearly.
Yeah, well, it's an NGC number.
So there's also Eagle Nebula in that part of the sky. Now, Eagle Nebula.
NGC 6544.
Okay, six.
Found it.
Cool. So Eagle Nebula contains an object which Hubble first imaged, one of its very first images, 30 odd years ago, called the Pillars of Creation. And that was an Eagle Nebula. I think Eagle Nebula is Messier number 16, isn't it?
I know that much.
No, good. So the center of the Milky Way and all those beautiful star clouds and that whole area, that's where there's heaps and heaps of really cool objects. Lots of globular clusters, lots of open clusters, and of course a whole myriad of nebula, which are or nebulae, which are all there, which is quite amazing.
It is a phenomenal place to look at the center of the Milky Way, especially because the center of the Milky Way in our hemisphere here in New Zealand in particular goes up above at zenith overhead. So it's
Yep,
not that we
right
don't
over here.
see the center of the Milky Way in the northern hemisphere. We do see it, but it is not as high as it gets in here. So for all these reasons, New Zealand is the best place on earth to look at the stars.
Yay.
So it says here that the Trifid Nebula, coming back to the Trifid Nebula, that's because when I came to New Zealand in 2005, one of my very first movies I have ever seen was
The Triffids.
The Trifids,
The
the
Day of the
Trifids. Yeah,
Triffids.
and I was at Cut Observatory, and Ron Fisher was my boss at the
I
time.
think I was traumatized
If
watching that.
he's listening, if you're listening to this, Ron, yeah, I've been traumatized by it too. And we used to after everybody left, after everybody went home, we had one night a week. It was a Sunday night. We would have a movie night, and so we would go in the big classroom that was there at the observatory, and would put movies on, and would just watch movies and eat, I don't know, whatever from the
Basically,
chips.
the gist of the movie is there's a meteor shower, and everybody who sees the meteor shower goes blind. There's a chap in a hospital who didn't go blind because he had some eye injury, but his eyes were put up. So anyway, he recovers, wakes up the next morning to see these big orchid-like things wandering around eating.
Eating people.
Yeah.
And so we saw this movie because it was prompted by us looking at the Trifid Nebula.
Yeah, there you
So
go.
imagine that, my first encounter with the day of the Trifids. And then I had to go home through the park, through the botanical gardens after midnight. So that was fun.
After a meteor shower.
After a meteor shower from Cut Observatory.
With your eyes closed.
So Messier 20 or Trifid Nebula was discovered by Mr. Le Gentil.
Oh, yeah,
Yes,
Mr. Le
our friend.
Gentil.
Yes, yes,
Yeah.
yes. Yes. Tell us about Mr. Le Gentil.
Well, I think we mentioned him before, but this poor chap, a famous French astronomer, and he went, so he was kind of working in the 1760s, made a name for himself. Anyway, he decided to hop on a voyage in 1761 to measure the transit of Venus. Now, in was it 1742 or 1746, sometime around then. Anyway, Edmund, I don't know, Halley, was his name Edmund Halley? Yeah, anyway, he
No,
died.
Hillary.
Not Hillary, not Edmund Hillary. Halley died, and prior to that, he'd worked out that actually, if you measured the transit of Venus, so that's how long Venus takes to go across the face of the sun, which doesn't happen very often, only ha happens like every 120 years, and it's in pairs, so it happens once and then a few years later. If you measure that from different places in the world, you can do a bit of trigonometry and work out the distance from the Earth to the sun. So the first kind of opportunity to do this was 1761. Now, at the time, the French and the English were at war, so they weren't really cooperating on it. In fact, they're trying to actively sink each other's ships. Le Gentil, he was French, so he trundled off in a boat, off our ship, off to the Indian Ocean to go and observe the transit of Venus from India, place in India, place called Pondicherry. Anyway, he hops on his boat, off he goes, and he gets closer and closer, realizes actually that the English and French are at war, right? So the English had taken the port, and so he couldn't go into the port to do his observation. So he's a little bit upset by that. Saw the transit from the ship, which was a bit useless because the ship was bobbing around all over the place, so they couldn't do any measurements. Anyway, he thought, well, okay, I'm in the Indian Ocean. The next transit was in 1769, so 8 years later. And he thought, well, okay, well, since I'm in the Indian Ocean, I might as well go and do some mapping. So he trundles off to the coast of Africa and Madagascar and maps them really, really well. Sends his stuff periodically back to France. Never got a reply. Just assumed his letters would go in there and no one really cared. Anyway, come 1769, he's thinking, okay, I'll go and do these observations again. Tries to work out whether he's going to go to the Philippines or back to back to India. Anyway, decides eventually to go back to India, to the original place he was going to do the observations in 1761. Turns up there, lovely day, looking good, builds his little observatory. He's not worried about the French or the English at war because they're at peace by this time. Builds his observatory, all gets ready, goes to bed. Next morning, wakes up, all ready to observe the transit of Venus, and it's cloudy. He was not happy. Apparently, basically got drunk for 3 months.
I
And
get
then,
that. I totally get that.
he was not pleased at all. Hopped on a boat, got shipwrecked, trying to get back to France, right? Got shipwrecked twice, ends up in Spain, had to walk home.
Walk
Fine,
from Spain.
finally gets home to France.
Say to walk home from Spain.
Oh, a couple of days. I don't know. Must have been months. It probably wasn't a very nice footpath. Anyway, he got back and he's like, gets to his house, which is in ruins, and he sort of finds his family. Anyway, finds his wife's remarried someone else because they all thought he was dead. He lost his seat on the Royal Academy of Sciences. So he petitioned the king, got his job back, which was quite good.
What happened to the wife?
Well, he didn't get his wife back.
Got another one.
He had to petition to get his lands and assets back, but eventually got all that back. So he kind of returned to some semblance of the life he had had before his grand adventure around the Indian Ocean.
And this is what you get if you're passionate about science.
Yeah, well, he was very passionate about science. Yeah. Oh, he was, of course, one of the great navigators and one of the great map makers of the time. So,
Oh.
yeah. So, anyway, so Trippet
So he
Nebula
discovered
is
Trippet
one
Nebula,
of his
which
legacies.
is like if you look in the telescope at it, it looks big. And it looks big because it's the diameter of the full moon.
It is big,
Yeah, it's really, really big. And it's one of the youngest clouds of gas that we know of. It's about 300,000 years old.
That's just a baby.
So that's just a baby nebula. Such a cool thing. Like, what was on Earth 300,000 years ago?
Well, humans were kind of recognizable back then, weren't we?
Yeah. What else?
Not that I remember.
Nothing much. Cake wasn't invented.
No cake. We hadn't done
No,
farming yet, so we hadn't
no
worked out
farming, no farming.
how to make wheat and things.
Yeah. And so this
Well, I think
Trippet Nebula.
humans were still bowling around in Africa back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this Trippet Nebula has a star cluster in the center of it as well, which is pretty amazing. And the stars that make the star cluster, and especially you can actually see those two stars in the very, very center. There are
Yeah, you
two
can.
stars,
Yeah.
very visible, pretty amazing, and they're O stars. So what is an O star?
They are the biggest of the stars. So the O stars are the largest stars and the rarest, actually, because there's not many of them, because the biggest stars, so they don't live very long. That's quite impressive.
Yeah.
There's also some
It's
dark
a baby
nebula.
star. It's a baby
Yeah.
star cluster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also some dark nebula in that nebula, which are quite interesting. So you've got some nice cold regions and some
But what
prime star formation
so
areas.
those cold regions are kind of like the same, like the ones that the Hubble saw in the very famous Pillars of Creation.
Yeah.
So that's very, very cool. So yeah, this is what we've been doing lately, and we've been to, drum roll, Mount Wilson
Havelock.
Observatory.
We went
No,
to Havelock.
Wilson Observatory.
Yeah, so Mount Wilson Observatory, just out of Los Angeles, we went up and looked in a massive telescope, the 100-inch Mount Wilson telescope.
Let's say that together.
The
Three,
one,
two, one.
oh, the 100.
100-inch telescope, people. 100-inch telescope.
And the 60-inch, which is big as well. So 100 inches is about 2 and a bit meters, isn't it?
Yeah,
It's really
it
big.
was insane.
So that's the same
Best
telescope.
day ever.
Oh, it's awesome. That's the same telescope that Edwin Hubble looked in.
BTW only saw two objects.
So Edwin Hubble, that's who Hubble Space Telescope's named after. When he was looking in the 100-inch, he was
That's
taking
Mr. Hubble to you.
Mr. Hubble. Well, he would have been Dr. Hubble, actually. He was taking photographic plates of what he was looking at.
This telescope is insanely famous. It's like on every single LP. Anybody who sings about space and astronomy would have some Mount Wilson observatory in it. Fred Watson actually has a really good song about it.
So Hubble took photographic plates of the stuff that he was looking in on that telescope, and he identified a special kind of star that pulsates. And by identifying that star, he could work out how far away this object, which we now know as Andromeda Galaxy, is. And now at the
Yes.
time, they called them nebula. They thought these spirally funny shapes were in our galaxy. But the work that Hubble did and Henrietta Leavitt, who was working with him, what they figured out was that actually this Andromeda galaxy was well outside our galaxy. So it wasn't a nebula in our galaxy. It was something much further away. And at that moment, they realized that the universe was a whole lot bigger than just our galaxy. Because up until that time, we just thought the universe was our galaxy and that was it. But at that moment, using the 100-inch telescope that we were lucky enough to have a look in,
With that telescope that we
yeah,
looked through, you snap, you see.
they suddenly realized that the universe was actually really, really, really big and contained loads and loads of galaxies. So I sat on Hubble's seat
Yeah,
that
so
he
you were
used to
just
do
sitting.
his observations, which was pretty cool. Also had a look at the old clockwork mechanism of the telescope, and it was amazing. It had this man, all these weights on it.
I missed the seat because I was too busy taking pictures. Documenting everything. That's what you get to try and be a good person.
Yeah, no, I went for the tour, the behind the scenes tour. And they had the Wright Ascension Drive. We were watching that. It's this big, it was amazing to see that thing working. But a very impressive telescope and so historically important.
So this all happened thanks to Jim Critchley.
Yep, teacher at Mount Maunganui
He
College.
had this idea, genius idea, to organize this tour at Mount Wilson Observatory. Not just he had a lot of people coming, including the New Zealand interns at JPL and our students that we went there with, and a bunch of other people that we met and we hanging around with. It was pretty amazing. It was one of the most amazing nights.
Yeah, it was such a good night, and the weather was pretty good. There's a little bit of smoke in the sky there. There's been a few fires around LA in the last few weeks, but absolutely amazing opportunity. Though you do have to watch out for bears up there.
Do you
I
mean
don't think
bears or bears?
I've never ever been stargazing where you've got to watch out for bears, other than the bears you drink.
Bears.
Yeah, but this was bears like furry ones that have claws and stuff. Yeah. So
Everybody
fortunately, we didn't see any bears. We were warned not to leave any food out, which didn't.
was eating.
Yeah, so we locked all the food away.
So the guys show up and they were like, oh, you should lock your food in the car.
Which has all been carried around in big bags.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we survived. Everybody came back home.
Also out there is some very impressive solar telescopes. So some of the first big solar telescopes used in the world that did some pretty amazing observations. So we got to have a look at that, some incredibly historical
So if you're into
things.
astronomy, you have to go and see Mount Wilson Observatory.
And I think a 100-inch telescope must be one of the largest telescopes in the world you can actually look in, because all the other big telescopes you can't look in them; they've all got instruments on them. But this one originally was for instruments only, but they adapted it so you could look in it.
Anyway,
Yeah,
so
so that was
that's
our
us
grand trip.
for
Yeah.
today, yeah, grand trip. And we will reemerge next time. And until then, clear skies so that
Yeah.
we can always see the stars.
Bye. Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari. Star Safari.